afternoon, everyone. We'll go ahead and start our notice meeting for procurement 2023-0020 meeting. I'd like to recognize Councilman Boylan and Council President Salem for being here. I appreciate y'all's interest in this, and we'll go ahead and start down at the end and do introductions.
Hodges, Office of General Counsel.
Philip Peterson, Council Auditor's Office.
Ron Salem, City Council.
Mike Gay, District 2.
Michael Boylan, District 6.
We've got Scott Wilson out in the audience, administration. So probably the first one we'll get on and will be the ODP, the Owner Direct Purchase. I think we made a lot of headway last week, and I believe it was this week that we had another meeting. It all kind of runs together on everything we've been doing, and I appreciate everyone's work and the time that we've put in this here, and I think it's going to be beneficial to the citizens of Jacksonville, the managing our money and making sure we are able to capture back as much money as possible and be responsible stewards for the citizens' money. Our two council members here, where we're at, I know Mr. Boylan, you was in the meeting earlier this week, Council President Salem, we kind of give you a quick analysis and summary of the ODP. I think we looked at what procurement and public works provided as in the past, the past year, been able to save about $1.5 million in projected or in savings on the amount that the ODP was used. And what we're looking to do here is make it a mandatory process to where it's used, and the only time it's not used is when Dustin, the chief of procurement, has a situation that he deems it's going to impact a project being finished, or there's some circumstances that's going to prevent it from being used, that where it would be effective to delay the project. And I believe we've looked at the, I don't know if you have any additional on that you want to fill in, Nina.
I don't have an additional copy of this, but if Council President would like to look at this, this is that analysis that we did.
Right.
And so there are five contracts, and that's actually over the last 3 years, that and you'll see the materials, the value, how many invoices were required by each material, and then the tax savings is towards the right column. You'll see that was the analysis that we did, and based on that, we had talked about at the last notice meeting what we thought a good threshold might be, that where the savings of tax would well offset the cost associated with the labor of managing those invoices and payments.
And then y'all established a cost per invoice get them prosecuted.
The processing, we estimated about $300 or $400 per invoice in labor across the different people who have to touch that invoice. And so if you multiply it out by the number of invoices, you get a general sense of, let's say, an item has typically six invoices. That would be about $2,400 to process that direct purchase. And so if the tax savings are close to that, it certainly doesn't make sense to do that level of purchasing.
So we pretty well came to the conclusion that for regular projects, contractors, we had a $100,000 threshold that we would look to implement the tax savings on. JSEP, we're looking to keep them at a lower figure at the $10,000 amount. So I can circle back on that and kind of give you the analysis of why we came up with that figure. But in the, so the data you provided was based on 3 years?
3 years, yes.
Okay. So the capital, say, our just capital spending over 1 year, what would that dollar amount be?
We talked about that a little bit, Dustin. I know it varies, and then not all of that, of course, is going to materials. So we did not pull out that number, but if we think about us spending, say, $300 million in capital projects and a third of that were in materials, then, you could calculate the savings if it was every item. But, if you set a threshold of $100,000, that certainly is not every line item in every bid.
We're saying the third of $300 million would be the material that we would typically be looking at, potentially gaining 7% of that back. And I think, and I feel in the grand scheme, that it warrants the $300 or $400 per invoice. Some purchase orders you'll see on here is one invoice that's $20-something thousand savings. And so that's makes it worth the while right there. But having the 100,000 threshold set to where when we are able to get this implemented, and we discussed at the last roundtable meeting that we all had, arm wrestling match, that once this gets established, that I truly feel, and that we can go back and revisit with the procedures that takes place, like with the school board that does this, the JPA, the JAA, all of them already do this. They have one person that is a procurement specialist for ODP that's making sure that these material purchase orders are captured, the money's coming back to the city, and we're getting that sales tax benefit back. So that kind of, it'll bring it full circle. Yes, sir.
Ask a couple questions.
Thank you.
First of all, Councilmember Gay, thank you for bringing this issue to the table. It's one that was not a part of the original procurement bill, and I think it's one very much worth discussing and fine-tuning to make it work for both the contractors as well as the city. Now, as I just want to review this in my mind, what we're saying is the bid must contain at least $100,000 in material and supplies for this to kick in.
We're actually saying there needs to be a line item or more that is $100,000 or more. So
correct.
Even if the sum of all materials is $100,000, that doesn't trump if there are one or more line items to a vendor.
Okay.
Right. So, for instance, it may be a $150,000 contract that the prime contractor has, and he has a vendor that has a $100,000 supply.
So, one line item, one vendor needs to be $100,000. Okay, for this to kick in.
Correct.
So that's 7% we would get back, and we've determined that the cost of that is significantly less than that.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Can we require when bids are submitted that information is included in their bid so that we could would be easy to be recognized on the front end?
Yes, sir. What we've done is we've went through the framework of that to where it with Public Works that we've got that structure in there ahead of time, the ODP clause in the contract. So as soon as it's in process to be awarded, they're compiling their data to get to us to do these deductive change orders to purchase the material.
Okay, let me make sure I'm clear. What I'm saying is, as a part of the bid of the contractor, they would list those items, the material and supplies, and it wouldn't be included in the amendment so that it would be very easily recognized if this issue kicks in or not.
When a contractor submits a bid, there is a schedule of value. There are line items
Is there any reason not to include that in the amendment?
Right. So through the chair, Council President, you certainly can. You can. I think right now the assumption is Justin can easily control that with his solicitation document. But if you wanted to place it in our code, you certainly can do that.
So we're looking to give Dustin the framework to take and administer it to what Public Works or whoever the department is that comes to him to be able to.
No, I understand. I'm just leery of setting up systems for Dustin or any individual. I'm looking beyond him, not that he's going anywhere, for a process in place for whoever's in the chief of procurement, that whenever that bid comes in, that information is readily available.
Well, I would imagine you would put that in the RFP. Let people know in the RFP if there's any items you plan on purchasing over $100,000. I mean, that's a procedural. I don't know. It needs to be in the, doesn't need to be in the bill.
Prohibition. Yes. And putting in the code. Okay.
Yeah, but you put in the code,
right.
You want.
It can be in your manual.
It can be in the RFP manual.
And it will be in the RFP documents for sure.
Sure.
But if the question is, can we add it to this amendment language, we certainly can. Doesn't harm anything. You're just giving your procurement chief more directive. And obviously, in order to change that, you'd need City Council to take it out.
That would be my thought. Okay. Just to make it a bit stronger, and it's very clear what the whoever's submitting the bid needs to include. And if $100,000 is the magic number that everyone's decided upon, that's fine with me as well.
Can we speak to that? The last meeting, that was not the number that you'd all suggested. Have you given more thought to that? Is the $100,000 an acceptable number?
I'd heard $250,000, but
right. We had proposed $250,000.
Okay. Oh, you've worked behind the scenes. It looks like Councilmember Gay. Can I follow up? And do I read this to say that if there's some reason that number doesn't make sense on a particular bid, the chief of procurement has the ability to exclude that?
Through the chair, Council President, the language that was submitted Friday, it states that the chief shall provide written justification for any such termination regarding the city's non-participation in direct material purchase. I'm gonna rely heavily on the user agency. I don't know the details of these projects like they do. So I was gonna request from OGC to tweak that language a little bit to say, I'm signing the certificates of entitlement. However, that justification for not using this has to start with the user agency so I can evaluate it.
I agree.
Mimic that. Right now, that's how your single source awards are done. The using agency provides a justification, but it's still a recommendation, kind of just coming from your chief. But we can mimic that here. Yes, no problem.
I'm fine with that. That's
okay.
I'd like to recognize Councilman Peluso's arrival. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Councilman Gay. Happy to be here.
So we're good on the $100,000. We're gonna incorporate into the bill the requirement that they need to be notified that this is in place, and that Dustin is requesting for you to add in here to make sure it's the agency that provides the rationale for the exception. Okay. I want to speak just briefly to the $10,000 threshold for JSIPs. Does it make sense to put a limitation as to the number of invoices as related to that? So for example, you've got a $10,000 purchase, you get three invoices, you're actually not, it's not helping you. Does it make sense to say, this applies and limits the number of invoices associated with that limitation at 1, 2, 3, whatever. So we're not spending more money in processing a $10,000 purchase when, in fact, we're losing money in that regard.
My thought with the dollar amount, I want to help the JSEPs.
Sure.
Obviously, so if it comes
possible that a limit that we set would be hard to meet
So it makes sense to say it may be applicable if we're using 350 as the average cost. The trade-off is, you know, that would be two invoices in effect if we're not. So for items that require three or more invoices, the $10,000 may not apply. I'm just trying to get you out of the business of bookkeeping for JSIPS. Does that make sense?
Have a JSEB administrator who is the expert at the program. So I don't know if you've had a chance to consult with them, but you may want to run this by them to get that.
I think we need to, before, because Councilmember Pittman was involved in the last discussion about the $10,000 amount. And so I guess between now and the next Thursday meeting that we have, that we need to get with her and JSEP, because it's we're only talking, if I got my numbers correct, 300 JSEP participants compared to unlimited of the general procurement possibilities. So, you know, we want to keep this process, you know, JSEP in the forefront to where, you know, like I said from the beginning, the biggest struggle they have is the ability to have buying power and credit and purchasing. And so, you know, maybe we don't capture that in the balance of the scale. We don't capture that much to the positive back, but we're benefiting our JSEP program. And so I'd like to keep that in mind before we really kind of reach it above their threshold to be able
not suggesting changing threshold.
I'm just kind of basically, you know, saying, given the overview of it, to where, you know, a lot of these JSEPs deal a lot with concrete, and, you know, that's multiple tickets, you know, so we have to kind of look at everything that their industry that they're working in. So let's, I guess, before we try to move the needle one way or the other, let's between now and next Thursday, let's get their input, because I do not want to impact them whatsoever. The only other thing I want to say about the JSEP and the $10,000, after Lasiki, I got the email about this and started thinking, and, you know, it's dangerous when I start thinking. Do we want to keep where it says the as to JSEP prime contractor? Do we want to keep prime in there, and we just have it JSEP across the board that they have that? Because when they're on a larger project, they're not a prime. They're still not doing no more than what the capacity that they can do, so they may only be doing a $200,000 or $300,000 amount, to where we move the threshold to $100,000, and that's above what their contract could be. And so then we've taken that capability away from them.
Yes, the chair, I may have misunderstood that. I thought at our last meeting we talked about only focusing it on the prime contracts, because we said the subcontractors, would fit under the larger 100,000 threshold, so that population that's subcontracting would still be falling in that larger threshold. But I would defer to, you know, Dustin really and the JSEB administrator on what they think about that point.
To the chair, I think the best way to go about that language is not necessarily doing JSEB prime contractor, but just for JSEB set aside projects.
Okay, so that would not be a participation, but just a set aside. So I guess before we carve that in stone, we need to make sure this is a topic that we discuss with JSEP and Councilmember Pittman on this.
On my list.
So Thanks, guys, for letting me just kind of crash these meetings. When I see them, I get excited. I'm like, great, people in a room. I can grandstand. I'm kidding. So I do have two questions about this process. One of them I alluded to earlier, Lasikia, you and I talked about before. I want to see if in the criteria or in the matrix that we use to kind of determine how the procurement process works, or I'm sorry, who gets the procurement, is there a way to dock off like a half point or a point if you are, if that business is owned by a council member? So if I own a, I don't know, fencing business or whatever, and I apply for, one of these bids, is there a way to ensure that, okay, let's make it so that just based on my role as someone in city council and somebody who actually sits up here in our city government, is there a way to help ensure that, not ensure, is there a way to kind of reduce my ability to kind of influence? And I feel like this might be a good way to do so. Is that something that could be done?
Well, so let me give you some context. So the state statute, okay, there are already ethics laws that are in place that would prevent a council member, let's just use Councilmember Gay, since he's here, from being able to participate in direct city contracts that were evaluated bids, okay, for precisely that reason, because the assumption is, as a public official, they can call Dustin or call, you would never do this, okay?
Can you explain the types of bids? So
I'm getting there. Okay. I'm getting there.
I'm so unfamiliar with this process, I will admit.
Right.
So I appreciate that.
So I wanted, though, to start with the evaluated bids, which is where you would have, like, criterion. And so for those types of bids, the council member would be precluded under our state ethics laws. Okay, so we wouldn't have that scenario. The only scenario where our state ethics laws would permit a council member to have a direct contract with the city is under an invitation to bid, which is a sealed bid. And basically what that means is those are your cases where the city knows what it wants, it knows what the specifications are, and so all we're looking at is the lowest price. That's all. We're determining that this is a company that's responsible, they've responded to the specifications, and they have the lowest price. So the law, because of that, because there's no room to influence, because all you're doing is receiving sealed bids, you're opening them up, you're figuring out who has the lowest price, and government wants to be able to get the lowest price, even if it's a council member. The law says it is perfectly fine for a council member if they follow certain steps and disclose, because in that scenario, in that process, there's really no room for influence. Does that make sense? So I feel like I don't know what problem we're solving, since the ethics laws would already prohibit a council member from participating in an evaluated bid for city projects. Now, this wouldn't stop any council member from participating on a JTA project or a JPA, because they're separate entities.
Yeah, I think.
And does that?
I think more than just the problem that it quote unquote may solve, it's more or less a let's ensure to the public that we are not trying to enrich ourselves while being in this position, right?
And there's a disclosure requirement, so you should know. So even on those types of projects, low bid, where a council member can participate, and the law says that's okay because there's little room to, you know, manipulate or influence, there's also a requirement that there's a disclosure. So the world knows, like, before he can submit the bid, he has to fill out paperwork and say, I'm a council member, I have an interest in this product, I'm bidding on it.
Okay.
Just a comment. Sure. The unintended consequences by putting that in the bill doesn't acknowledge that the state overrides the opportunity for him doing that. You get my point? If we put in there, and by the way, we're going to discount, but the fact of the matter is he can't anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So there's totally no point in putting that, with all due respect, there's no point in putting that language in here, because by doing so, it makes it look, makes it appear that he has the opportunity to participate and he can't.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Not on the evaluated bids, okay? And then on the low bids, again, that's a different, it's a different process. There's no room for influence. And my other concern would be, you know, sort of, and I just have to think about it legally some more, council member, and sort of talk with you offline about it. It's like the, you know, the singling out I would probably broaden that to elected officials, just a larger class, appointed, that sort of thing, instead of specifically the council member. That kind of gives me some.
It would be Duval County elected officials, I would think.
Right.
Other than that, you did allude to my second question, which is low bid contracts. So what mechanism exists already where if somebody puts in a low bid, receives the bid, and then they say, oh, hey, no, never mind. That's not the actual cost. I have to provide you a higher estimate. Well, now you've already been awarded the bid, and now you've kind of done a bit of a bait and switch. Is there any way to penalize that and or make sure that, all right, if a company's going to do that, then the next time they bid for something, they are docked some points?
So Dustin was waiting for this question. There is a concept called change orders that's allowed, but that's unforeseen events that you could not anticipate. Sure. When you're responding. But generally speaking, when somebody bids on a project, we hold them to that. They are required to give us the price for that project at whatever they bid on. But I will defer to our procurement chief.
No, I mean, that's spot on. I mean, all change orders are given the same level of scrutiny as any other procurement that goes through the division. There has to be sound justification. It comes from the using agency, so the using agency has to, the bureaucratic process to approve it. Your low bid is the reason why you won the contract. I think it's to a point where it looks like you're scope creeping or doing something outside of what was submitted.
And then, Dustin, you should also talk about the bid bonds, right? Because the whole point of the bid bond is to protect the city. So you want to talk about that?
The bid bond, performance bond, and the payment bond.
Are they
Yeah,
go ahead, please.
Can you explain to the council member what a bid bond is?
Talk to me like I'm five.
Yes.
Well, there are pictures. That'd be great.
And if you don't, if you back out, then
we call the bond
between the difference of the low bid and the next low bid so that the city is not.
Your typical bid bond is either 5% or 10%. And so of that bid, so if you back out of it, they could call the bond and get 5% of your bid amount from that bond to help bridge the gap to the next bidder.
So you feel confident in this process that currently exists?
The ITB process?
Okay.
There's also conflicts of interest. That's actually in the bill. So the bill passes. I'm going to make sure that before a source selection board or anything involving a city employee evaluate the bid, that they sign those conflicts of interest from the employee side. And then the ITBs, there's conflict of interest forms that have to be submitted.
Roger that.
Okay, so that we'll be moving this to the next discussion with JSEP, and I think we pretty well got it dialed into what we need to on the one end. We just got to fine tune the JSEP. So any other? Okay. All right, we'll move on to the next fun topic, the local preference. So we've in our past meeting that we had Monday, Tuesday, whatever it was, the from our last week's meeting and the input that came in from the community and the table up here, I look to move away from the one prime contractor basically being the local preference, as into it being a participation amount that we would actually be able to get more businesses working for the contractor, whether he was in town or out of town. And so it wouldn't have the potential effect of discouraging anybody to come here. JSEP would have the first hand in the the jar to get their percentage. If it's if their percentage is dialed in at 20%, and we've got a total of 40% hypothetically, they would get the first 20. Then the next 20 would be the local participation, and I feel like that would still keep our doors open to the rest of the neighboring counties, and still doing the footprint of the Northeast Florida Regional Council footprint of the seven counties as classifying them as local. And so that I think where we were at is dialing in that participation percentage. So, but before we get to that, we'll go ahead and open up for questions.
Yeah, I would prefer language as an amendment that once the seven counties are in agreement that they will participate together, that becomes then it's low. Everyone has the same ability, whatever county they're from. And putting in an amendment such as that, and hopefully that can be and challenge the Northeast Florida, what's the name of the organization? Regional Council, task them with contacting each county to get their buy-in and having them sign an agreement that they will treat each bid the same way.
So basically what you're saying is go ahead and get a what like Sarasota and Tallahassee has already done with their regional group down there. They've got already got a working agreement. You feel we need to get that in place before we basically everybody steps across the line at the same time.
Yeah, I would say leave it as it is would be my thought until we have buy-in from the seven counties. And then we would all everyone would be treated the same within those. If X company from Jacksonville bid of something in Baker and they were the low bid, they get it, and everyone's treated the same. And just and hopefully that's something that can be expedited by the Northeast Florida Council.
Would you be open to maybe having something in the bill that says after this date we will then go with this regional council group or the seven counties? So instead of us waiting and maybe filing legislation later on, putting into the bill now and saying, hey, in 2 years' time, that's when this thing will kick in.
Well, I wish if I'd have thought about it, we could have invited Beth here, the I guess the director or of the Northeast Regional Council. Has anyone spoken to her?
Because no, I was going to actually bring it on the new business this month at the meeting.
Okay, because I think if we're tasking her with a project, I think she needs to understand what
right.
we're doing.
And so this and we can look at getting the network put together. I would just already let's go ahead and discuss. What if it's only six out of the seven? If it's only five out of the seven that's going to be willing to do it? My thought was to extend the open door, and whether they wanted to reciprocate or not, that we didn't close the door.
Yeah, I think I raised the same suggestion last time, but I think the attitude of the group was let's take a lead on this. Go ahead and put in our definition of local preference as the seven county area, and expect and hope that the others do. I mean, I get your point, but it becomes pretty convoluted.
So you're saying we would be in the position that if someone from Baker was the low bid, they're going to get it.
Right.
And is that not the way it is now?
Low bid.
That's what I'm saying. Low bid is low bid. So how is that different than what we're doing now?
Well, because it gives the preference to the seven county area. That's how it's different from now, because a low bid could be coming from Atlanta, Georgia.
Right.
Go ahead, Nina.
President, if I could clarify, Councilmember Gay, I think what you're talking about today is different than what was previously proposed.
Correct.
So previously proposed was a local preference, which if the low bidder was not from around here, the they could match the low bid.
That's different. Local is Duval County, when you say.
Well, no, he was proposing Seven County. But this rewrite is completely different. Instead of a local preference, it is a local participation. And the intent was for the larger jobs over a certain threshold, rather than have a company come from out of town and use all their own forces, it was an encouragement or requirement to include a certain percentage of local businesses in their bid. So it's that's a completely different concept. It applies only to a certain set of projects and is easier to administer and has a potentially larger impact because it's these large projects.
That's the percentage pieces he was talking
about. Exactly. Correct.
Walk through an example.
Okay.
All right. Say ABC company from Atlanta comes in here. They're the low bidder. They will get the job based on the percentage of participation that we establish. If it's 40%, that they show that they use 40% of local businesses here in their bid.
Is that included in their bid?
In their bid of what they put together, yes, sir.
Right. And
Can I just add? So it's when they bid on it, they're not bidding on it as an entity of their own. They're bidding on it with the knowledge that 40% of it has got to be done locally. Is that what you're saying?
Generally, you're going to have multiple trades. On a project.
Right, correct.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a free enterprise guy. You know, so low bid. But I don't care where it comes from.
But we want to make sure that...
When we're talking about saving money, I mean, we're working all this stuff on sales tax to bring money in. And now here we're trying not to have the lowest bid.
Sir, they're saying the lowest bid. They're saying you still get the lowest bid. They're just saying that in that bid. So you got someone from Atlanta, you got someone from Miami, you got someone from Pensacola.
No, you're not. With all due respect, if they can't give the low bid, knowing they're going to have to sub out some of that to people that they will.
I think they're saying there's always multiple companies that are a part of that bid.
Maybe, but we're forcing them to use people from Jacksonville versus people that they know that may give a better price.
Well,
that's
it would
the difference.
Perhaps philosophically, I understand your comment, but it's just we want to help build the trades here in the city of Jacksonville, do we not, and in our region?
Well, do you want the best price is the question.
They would still have the lowest bid, would they not? They just now have to say we're going to use some people from Jacksonville. Yeah.
The evaluated bids, there's already a discount.
Well, there's an evaluation criteria to score more points for local. There's a tie-breaking policy within my manual. If you're local, you win at the tie. But to the council president's point, it does.
Right, but do the.
Let him finish his point.
Can I just point out, Dustin, currently today on every single project, these same big companies, they know they have to use JSEBs. They are local businesses. So right now today, there's already a local preference that's in place. And these businesses, when they bid, they know, because we have participation goals that are required for them to utilize their JSEB. So I'm only bringing the point up, this is not a foreign concept, because right now we have a JSEB program that's been in place for over 20 years. But we are certainly expanding it because we're going higher than that JSEB level of what we would qualify as a small business. So it would be, you know, larger, small, local companies that would also be, these companies would be required to use.
Right. And, you know, the percentage amount is still to be dialed in on. And this, correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Hodges, that we were still doing a 2-year sunset,
correct,
on this,
right?
Because we really don't have data that says it will cost money or it will save money. But it's if we can keep the money here and investing in our business and helping our tax base, it's kind of the whole concept of what we're looking at, or what I was looking at on this.
I'm sorry, can you mention that sunset again? I don't really understand.
So basically, when the ordinance is approved, and remember, the procurement officer is going to need 6 to 7 months before everything is actually in place, so I think it's by July 1st of 2024, there would be a two-year sunset where it would go away. Like this, the local preference that Councilmember Gay is proposing would go away in our code, and the only way it would stay in our code is if the council member or any other member moved to keep it there.
So it's essentially a pilot program.
Correct.
To see how it works.
There's so much good in this procurement bill. It's the reason that I took it from Cumber and reintroduced it. I'm comfortable with what we talked about before. I'm just concerned, and I don't know how the other council members feel. I would just hate to see this thing go down the tubes over this issue. And I'll tell you, I would be very concerned that I would vote against the entire bill because I just believe in free enterprise.
This is going to be an amendment, correct?
Right.
Right.
Correct. Okay.
Yeah, but right. If the amendment passes, it's part of the bill.
That's correct.
I envision if the amendment passes, we should assume the full bill will probably pass.
I wouldn't make that assumption. Not with the language we're talking about now. Because I sense the local business community is not going to, I mean, they want free enterprise. They want to be able to bid and get the job and not have to go through hocus pocus on other issues that we're talking about here.
Councilman Gay, do you think this is something that's discussed in the, I mean, you're in a manufacturing business, right? You kind of are in that world far more than I am. Is this something that people are already talking about, saying, hey, we're not getting enough contracts, we're not getting enough attention?
I guess the one conception is that, the whole construction industry is starved, depleted of workforce. It's definitely, there's a lot of discussion from A to Z that goes on out there, but one of the big, I guess, problems I don't want to get into or to say I didn't try to circumvent and take and rectify so it didn't happen is just like the courthouse that was built right across the street. We had one local contractor come in and participate on it, and other than that, there was transient workers that came in and want to try to do what we can to help our businesses, and that's the concept behind it.
Go ahead.
Well, just a question. As you mentioned it, and Ms. Sickler mentioned the fact that we left the last meeting with the criterion being that we're just going to redefine local preference, local entities, as the 7-county area. What was the motivation for changing it to what happened from the last meeting? Because the gentlemen here actually were supportive of it. I'm not sure where they stand on this formula. Could you help me understand the rationale for changing from where we landed last time and this time?
If
what you're proposing this time.
Yeah, it's basically moving the caveat to be the prime bidder to come in to be local, and then still bring in
outside
all the outside resources to do it. This would basically try to help our economy, as many businesses that we have here, to be involved in it.
Chair, can I also add, were you going to say something?
I was going to say something.
Do you want to go first?
Please.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I agree with my good friend, Councilmember Boylan. I had heard and talked to people that were at the meeting that this 7-member county idea was what we were moving towards, and getting agreement where those various counties would sign some document that they all agree to treat everybody the same within those 7. And I think that's a wonderful concept. I think that's free enterprise. I think going beyond that, what we're discussing today is the first time I've heard this, and I'm just leery that that we're not going to get the best price. And we've worked all this time and effort on a sales tax, and I think we're going to give it away on some bids.
So to that end, then, if somebody does put in the lowest bid but doesn't have, you know, 40% Jacksonville and Jacksonville businesses underneath their contract, do they still get the bid?
Which that is a normal protocol in JSEP.
Okay.
Yes, right. That's JSEP. That's not these large bids.
If this was to pass.
I understand.
And so.
So the lowest bid, without some of these extra protections that we're looking for, could still, in many cases, receive that bid or get that bid. Am I saying the right thing? Okay. Free enterprise.
Okay. Well, we'll.
Because I let Council President go. I'm a lawyer, so I'm going to talk. Okay, just 2 points really quick. Council Member Boylan, you asked a great question. I just want to make sure the other conversation that me and Council Member Gay had about moving to the participation is that with the preference, that's not guaranteed. You know, you can give someone extra points for a particular criterion, but it doesn't still mean that you're gonna get, you know, the highest score on the evaluated bid. And even with the low bid, when we're dealing with that percentage within, they still might. So I think the council member was wanting to move to a more fixed, guaranteed system. And by, you know, setting it similar to how we do the J-subs, that's guaranteed work that local companies would be able to have. So that's just to answer your question. The other question I would have to Council President is, so we did talk about, as Councilman Boylan said, expanding the definition of local to include those seven counties. We did not talk about entering into an interlocal agreement, and I was just curious if it's very common, and Dustin, you can expound upon this, for us to include what's called a reciprocity clause, where if one county, you know, has a local business preference or not, that's how we would treat them. And that would, if we wrote something like this, in fact, the current bill has proposed in it, the reciprocity clause, the ability of our procurement chief to write that in, would that give you comfort, Council President? I don't know if you want Dustin to explain that clause a little bit better.
But don't you think there needs to be a written agreement that so that the contractors that are bidding that know they're going to be treated fairly in that county?
Well, I think the solution is we don't have to put that in place because, like you said, what if only five of them decide to do so and one doesn't?
Correct.
So what that says is, as an example, St. John's County decides to have define local as St. John's County only, and we had this in place. They don't benefit from being able to, they don't get the same preference that the other counties would. So by keeping it as a reciprocal situation, okay, it becomes more permanent. And we don't have to wait to make sure all seven of them are on board. Right.
Well, I would say those that want to participate. If it's right, five or four or
yes,
three,
and
then
St. John's County would be hurting themselves by precluding
right,
us because now they're not getting the same preference in Duval County.
Right, and so that's a way to do it without having to go around and sign an agreement.
Wait for seven.
Right? I mean, so we would still have the same impact and the same effect.
You're looking for.
But you're telling me it's – but how do we know that Baker County is going to treat us the same way under what you're saying?
Right. So let's say they didn't. So if they did not treat us the same way, then they, if they were bidding on a project, they would not be able to get the benefit – of our local preference. But if they were treating us the same way, then they would be able to get the benefit. And that's, many counties have that. This is not a new clause. Many counties have this. And you may not like it, but many counties have it.
No, I mean, I've been in business for 45 years, And if I were, I'm not a contractor though, but if I was, I'd want to make sure that county is going to treat us fairly when we bid in their county, if we're going to treat them the same way here. And the only way I know to do that is to have some type of agreement in writing that says, yes, the Duval County contractors, when they bid in Baker County, will be treated just like they're a Baker County business. And I don't know how you do it without some type of agreement.
The reciprocity clause. However, the agreement is certainly another way to do that. And we had that conversation. I had that conversation with Councilmember Gay. We do have an interlocal workforce agreement right now. We could probably tweak that agreement. But in my legal mind, there's two ways to get to the same place. We could have an interlocal agreement, what you're talking about, and we could also move forward with changing the local definition to include the seven counties with the reciprocity clause. To me, it's the same result, either pathway you go. The one pathway would certainly take a lot longer, but that's okay, and that's your call to make.
Yeah, but the reciprocity clause just says that they're going to treat us. How do we know the reciprocity clause is working?
Well, and Dustin, I mean, for example, we know for a fact that St. John's County has a local preference policy that does not include Duval. So right. If we were to enact this, they would not get the benefit of our local preference.
But the other six, to our knowledge, do not have a local preference. Correct?
Right.
The other six do not.
Do not.
Correct. So they would get the benefit. Right? I mean, it would only be those counties that have a local preference that says it's only for Baker County. It's only for St. John's County. It's only in that scenario would we then.
But what if ABC contractor put in a bid in Baker County, was the low bid, and he didn't get it because somebody in Baker was slightly high and they gave Baker, the Baker company, the business? That blows up all this, correct?
So under normal procurement rules, if they were utilizing local preference, I mean, again, I think it would go back to Dustin having to do the research and talk to the other procurement chiefs to see exactly what type of policy they have in place. I mean, they could have it in their procurement code, they could have it in a manual, or they could have it on a case-by-case basis in a solicitation document. But you know, Dustin would have to, I mean, I think this would require him to do some due diligence to see what the other counties are doing. And I think right now we know for sure that there's only one county that has a local preference, and I see the contractor shaking their head, and they have excluded Duval from participating.
They're
in that.
Supposed to be reworking it.
Correct.
But right now we are.
Can I call one of the contractors up? Would that be okay?
Yeah, that's
Can one of y'all come up to the podium? Because I just want to.
This has changed from last time. Thank you for.
Well, I just
inviting us.
Can I ask you a couple questions?
Absolutely.
Okay. Are you comfortable with this reciprocity language that you're going to be treated fairly in the other six counties when you bid, or would you want something more concrete, as I have suggested, with some type of an agreement?
I would. From this point, when you sign you asked me to sign a contract. So what I'm asking you is get signed agreements with the other counties so that there is true reciprocity. What is the benefit without signed agreements to the contractor? I ask you, I heard benefit. What is the benefit? We are a Jacksonville-based company. It's been in business since 1983. I said that last time. The largest family-owned business in this community. Our people are hired out of this community. Well, excuse me, civil construction company. I need to be clear because we have Miller and some other very successful companies. But with all that being said, we are free enterprisers. We said that last time. And the reason is because I'm also a taxpayer in Jacksonville, a citizen of Jacksonville, and it brings the best value. But if there isn't signed agreements and true reciprocity, you end up with other language. And I have the last bid number 2394, County Road 210, widening from Trinity Way in St. John's County. And I'd be glad to read some of the language in here that now has created such a muck amongst the bidding or the contracting community. So you know, I would get into that if you asked, but hopefully asking that question, yes, I would like to see concrete language from the other counties, because not every county treats every county or every contractor the same. I get that, and I expect it, but I do want a fair playing field. That's all I ask for. Okay.
I think in the context of the reciprocity agreement, we can write in there that would require a written document from those counties saying. So, to your point,
yes.
Call it it's a reciprocity. Right. We don't have to wait for segment counties to get on board. We just say, Baker, if you want to play, give us a piece of paper that says, and we'll give you a piece of paper that says that we honor your contractors and you honor our contractors as part of your preference program.
I think that would be great. And the first county I'd like you to go to would be
St. John's. I got it. I get it.
That's and I share your frustration with what's going on there, and that's kind of what spawned my intention here to get everybody to the table. And if counties like Sarasota and Leon County and they can do it, then I feel like that we can do it. And when Councilman Boylan brought in the footprint of the Northeast Florida Regional Council, it only makes sense.
Sure. I totally agree. It has to be a community of counties that would enter the agreement before we could consider it. We are not against it. It is in our benefits. We are based in Duval County and have been. So you would think a contractor of our size and magnitude would love it because we're going to bring it in, but not necessarily because Duval alone cannot support a contractor of our size. You don't put enough work on the streets. I'd love to do nothing but work in Duval County, and the majority of our work is here. However, we want that same playing field equal across the state. And I can say we don't typically run into that, Mr. Gay, when we work out of this North Florida region, because most of our work deals with both state and federal funds, and it's an absolute no-go.
Right.
Okay, so that really levels the playing field there. We are glad to see those projects that have state funding in them because of that reason right there.
Well, Council President Salem, so I would suggest we look at the approach being the reciprocity amendment, if you will, but also includes it a written document exchange between the respective counties. That precludes the necessity of waiting to get six other counties on board.
That makes sense. Work?
What's my guarantee? What value? All right.
Well, like I said,
how do I go into Nassau County without a signed agreement? You ask me.
I'm saying to get a signed agreement.
Okay, as long as we get a signed
agreement, that's part of the reciprocity amendment.
Absolutely. Well, it has to be a signed agreement.
I would suggest, and I don't know when you're going to have another meeting, if it's before committee week. Are you planning another meeting?
Next Thursday.
Right. Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, next Thursday. We need language like this.
Yeah, we can do that.
Because, I mean, I wish we had language today for what we're discussing, okay. But I think we all know what I think there's consensus now on what
so.
We want.
Yeah.
Let's get it in writing, and let's get it out to everyone, even the contractors, ahead of time if we can, so that everyone can look at it.
You guys threw us for a loop today.
No.
On a percentage.
The percentage.
Can I ask a question since I'm up here? If you did a local preference, which, once again, this wouldn't affect J.B. Coxwell because we have 400 employees based here, or we're based out of Jacksonville. But to your point, you're going to do a goal? Is that correct? Is that what your intention is?
I guess the verbiage is we didn't want to say goal. We wanted to say a participation amount is what was looking to be established.
Okay, I thought maybe I'm out in left field. I thought we had gotten away from that part of your amendment, and we're strictly going to move towards the reciprocity in the agreement and get away from the using other people as part of your bid. You still want to include
that in some shape. We still have to keep in the mindset that there will be business coming in here from out of the seven county region. So we still have to make an avenue for them to be able to participate. We just can't say, you know, you're not in the seven counties and we're not taking a...
No, if they're the low bid, get the business. I don't care where they're from. That you know, that's my philosophy. If they can't... I mean, I don't want anyone punishing us from these local counties. If they treat us fairly, I'll treat them fairly. But other than that, it should be low bid.
That's, and excuse me on this one, that's us and our trade organization's concern, is that we will not be treated fairly. We just want a level playing field. We want to give our citizens the best value. We're set here, but we also want to do that for Baker, if they ever put any work out. Clay, which is getting ready to go through an explosion. St. John's, which is already there, and it has an amok problem with theirs, and these other communities, we want to be on a level playing field. We don't want this to create a domino effect.
I was going to be my question. Do we have that? So those seem kind of the 2040 kind of feel to it in other counties? Are we the first ones that are proposing that you must use 40? We say must. Use 40% of local
would
folks.
Be. You would be, and this is, and I can only speak, quite frankly, to the utility, roadway, civil business. I can't speak to the vertical component of it.
Right.
But it would be very new and kind of unformatted. I don't think you would, if you did that, you would really get the best value, because even in our work, specialty contractors, we have to have. Now, I do think the majority of, like, asphalt producers, well, all asphalt producers are here. But then let's take cement, concrete. Mr. Gay, you made that, and that is very clear. That's a big portion of what we do. There is truly no local supplier anymore. They're owned by big corporate entities. So if one guy started a business with two trucks and we're fighting for the best value on the cost of that concrete, does that mean that we are now going to use him because it's such a large portion of our work to get a 40%? There's a lot of catches in there that, you know, I think you'd have to think
through. The local has the criteria of, you know, they may have headquarters in Atlanta and that concrete company's here. Well, they've got the occupational license, they got the employees, they're considered local. Skew that.
Okay, because most of these guys that on the concrete business side, ready mixes I like to call themselves, are not local. They're multi-billion dollar corporations. And even our asphalt producers here in Jacksonville are multi-billion dollar corporations.
But
you don't see
they,
it. But
they have a facility here, so then, you know, they would
that
qualify.
That is correct. That right. is correct. So, I mean, it's they just for clarification, it really doesn't help or hinder us from that perspective on percentage because we're local, but I don't necessarily know that you're always going to get the best value there. And I think to your point, Dustin, there's two on the procurement methodology. If you're talking low bid, you got to go low bid the day of, and we go with the best price because we know we're in a competitive market. And if concrete producer A gives us $3 a yard discount, we're using him that day. Bid day is the day. So from that perspective, we try to give you the absolute best value on bid day. To that point, on the local preference, and what we see as being a bigger problem is that if contractor, this job here that let yesterday, had J.B. Coxwell been number two and been within 8%, according to St. John's County, we would not have had the opportunity
right.
to change our bid. However, the contractor who did get it, was a local, flipped the table. He now would have had 48 hours to say, wait a minute, Coxwell bid this? I can beat that. We right. can all beat each other after bid day. We just cut the margin we have on the job. And that's about as unfair as you can be. To us, that's just not an equal playing field.
Right, and that's what we're seeing with St. John's County and other municipalities that's pushing back against us because we're not local down there. And so with your scenario, you would be under the percentage or whatever the local, you would be 100%. So you would...
I know it sounds crazy what I'm saying, because I am local, but it's just there's not enough there to feed it. And free enterprise in the bid market, not the evaluated bid, that's a whole different ballgame because of what you're doing there. We just have always believed and have always stood by that the free market will basically give the taxpayers, the citizens of Jacksonville, the absolute best value. You have a – think about it this way, too. Many of the jobs that we bid, McCoy's Creek was the last one, the last large job that we picked up in the city of Jacksonville, $35.8 million. And that's for the outfall portion of work. You only had three bidders, okay? Two of those bidders were from out of town. There was only one bidder from in town, and that was us. We were successful. But had you had that preference, what would have happened if I knew I was the only bidder? You're a contractor. I'm a contractor. Would I have changed my bid? Is there a possibility? Could have. So I think in that example, when you start talking about specifically your civil work, your roadway utilities, you got to be careful because your pool of contractors is fairly small here. Now, if you have a big letting, you're going to have a couple jobs come out. And next year, if all goes well, those two or three jobs come out and the three or four local contractors each pick up one, then good. But you've probably going to decrease the amount of competition they would have had. You know, if I get my job, the first job, and contractor B gets his the second, well, we know what's going to happen on the third job, right? So I just caution you guys as far as this goes. We want to bring the best value. That's always been our model. And we will take all comers in doing so. But we do believe it creates a market condition that's not favorable to us outside of this community. And that's what we're concerned with. Yeah.
Now,
Would state your name and address for the record.
Chris Blank. I'm going to use my work address, which is 6741 Lloyd Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32254. J.B. Coxwell Contracting.
We do have one more speaker, Blake Nugent.
Yes, sir. Blake Nugent, J.B. Coxwell. Chris pretty much said everything I was wanting to say, but I will expound on one point, and that is that let's say you guys want to do a participation goal of 40%. Well, we don't want it. J.B. Coxwell doesn't want it to be a goal because a goal doesn't make it mandatory. So, therefore, we would want it to be a requirement. But even with that, my concern is that you're not necessarily getting a low bid. You're getting an inflated low bid. So if you have three companies that are all required to use a local contractor, that does not necessarily guarantee you the lowest possible price. You're going to get the lowest price that they have, but you could have cut millions, hundreds of thousands if they would have used their own personnel. So, like Chris said, we support free enterprise, and we think that that's probably the best for the city.
Thank you, sir.
I do have one question.
Yes, sir.
When in the heck are you guys going to start working on Orange Picker and Brady? Thank you. Please. I drive by it every day. So where the heck are they?
We can discuss it after. Nina?
Thank you.
That's the power of the microphone.
ended up being a progress meeting.
I hope so.
So I appreciate y'all coming out.
Are we going to step away from the 40-20 piece? I share the concern in Council President Salem. It's a good bill, and I think if we leave it at the local preference with the reciprocal agreement piece to it. I mean, I get your point. I've got a son-in-law who spends 13 days a week, 13 days, he's out of town for 13 days working in Nashville for Harmon. And never gets to see his own children as a result. So I appreciate getting people working locally, but at the same time, I don't want to do this to countermand, the encouragement of free enterprise, but local contractors.
Yes, yes, sir. I think we'll take it back and huddle up and give it some more
okay,
consideration on what we're going to target here and what we move forward on. But there is a big concern with what our neighbor's doing down there. And it's not very neighborly.
Well, I hear you, but let's don't retaliate. Let's try to set an example. Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree. What happened?
Right. And that's what the initial goal of this was: is we wasn't closing the door. We were basically putting olive branches out and saying, let's all. Sing kumbaya and get along. But I understand your concerns and would definitely
I've been around here long enough, and I know Councilmember Boylan is. We got a good bill that does a lot of good stuff. Let's don't jeopardize it over something that would be difficult. So you're going to develop
really
language.
I mean, just say this. So for the contractors that are out there, this amendment, gay number 2, has been out there for a very long time. So this is already language talking about the preference that we've been spending all this time on, not the fixed goal. That was a new concept, he was just tossing that out to get your feedback.
That was the curveball they were talking about.
But this is existing language that's been out there for about a couple of weeks now. The biggest issue that you had was local was only defined to Duval. We've changed that language. This language already had the reciprocity concept in it. But based on this discussion, we're going to beef up that reciprocity section. And so the next time we meet, I'll come with this amendment as amended based on this discussion.
And you'll send it out before the meeting?
I'll send it out before the meeting, yes.
Okay, because I'm going on this chamber trip next week, so I'm not – we get back Wednesday. I'll make every effort to be here Thursday. That's Thursday at 2, same time?
2:30, I believe.
2:30. Okay.
Okay.
We're getting there, and I appreciate everybody's interest in coming out and representing and having a voice. So that's what we're here for. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bob is right. Good stuff.
Appreciate your patience.